Hey there, it's Dr. Heidi. You're listening to It's Not Normal, It's Toxic, a podcast geared towards the things you may be misunderstanding about the difficult relationships in your life. I did not understand it when I was in it, but I definitely understand it now, and I want to share that understanding with you so that you too can find the courage you didn't know you had to make the changes you didn't think you could make.
Okay, today I want to talk about what it's like when you're triggered. The word that anybody listening to this podcast or anybody reading this blog probably despises. I'm sick of the word. I'm sick of the word in my life. People around me are sick of the word. What is a trigger anyway? A trigger is anything that can be sensed or felt or smelled or heard or seen that causes a strong, sometimes overwhelming emotional response, such as anger, sadness, fear. And these type of things pop up what seems to be out of nowhere. And they usually stem from a negative experience in the past, a reoccurring traumatic event, or living in an unhealthy environment for a long period of time. Triggers occur when something in the present mimics or feels similar or even identical to a feeling that you had during one of those traumatic events, experiences, or in the environment from the past. We feel captive because of the triggers. And when I say we, those who have been through abusive relationships or repetitive trauma or have, you know, grown up in a difficult environment, we feel captive to the triggers. One of the reasons we feel captive is because we don't fully understand them. One of the things that makes me feel captive to triggers from my past is it makes me feel like there's something wrong. From the outside looking in, for somebody who doesn't understand it or doesn't know anything, when a trigger happens to me, they look at me like, what's the matter with you, right? And we feel like we're broken, or we feel like there's something we have to fix when we have these triggers, because when we try to explain them, they're difficult for us to explain because we don't understand them. And they're difficult for us to explain them to people who have never been through it. Most of the people in your life, even those who are close to you and really wanted to support you, they didn't understand your struggle. When you're in a toxic relationship or you're in an emotionally abusive relationship, it's not that they don't want to support you. It's just that if they've never experienced the emotional trauma bond, they're not going to understand it to the level that you describe it. So because most of the people in your life didn't understand the situation, they're not going to understand your triggers either. I was devastated about feeling that no one understood. I couldn't explain it right. They didn't care enough to try. And, you know, years and years later, now I realize that those who don't understand it have never been through it. And now when I look at the people that I maybe semi was angry at because they didn't take the time to listen, or they didn't listen intently enough to get it, I'm grateful that they haven't been through it. You know, my sisters, my mom, they supported me the best way they could, but they didn't know what else to do because they have never been in that situation. And now they have never been in a situation where they've had to deal with triggers like I have to deal with, you know. And how that reflects on me is I feel like I'm the crazy one of the family. I feel like I'm the one that, oh, here she goes again. Oh, she, you know, it's always, well, you know, you should be over it. You should be over it because it's been a long time. I did a previous episode on triggers, probably way in the beginning, and what causes them and why we react to triggers the way that we do. But on this episode, I want to talk a little bit more about what it feels like when you have a trigger. And this is where my background comes in handy. In the chiropractic profession, or at least when I was going through school, we are very, very much educated on the phenomenon on how the human body takes care of itself. It was designed to heal itself. It was designed to protect itself. Okay. It's called innate intelligence. Just like in hypothermia, the body has to decide what is important. And in doing so, it decreases the flow of blood to the extremities so it can keep the blood around the organs. Life is in the organs. So the body says the best action is to preserve life under the circumstances, and the fingers and the toes aren't near as important as the organs when it comes to preserving life. So circulation doesn't go all the way to the extremities when you're in a case of hypothermia. Now, when you're in a toxic environment, the body does the exact same thing. The body gives you warning signs. The body also keeps track of the things that you experience when you are in these situations. We might see a red flag and you feel a tighten in your stomach. You're criticized, you may begin to sweat or feel very anxious. We feel tension in our bodies or in ourselves when we're around dangerous, or whether it's emotionally dangerous or physically dangerous situations or people. You'll notice there's a change in how your body feels when you're around certain people. Okay. This tension is what I call it, is our body's natural defense mechanism telling us something's wrong. Something's dangerous. Beware. You're not safe here. But most of us are going to ignore that. We most always ignore those tensions or those anxious feelings in the beginning by saying something like, they just had a bad day, or, you know, it's really no big deal. I should have been more clear. I should have kept my mouth shut. I shouldn't have brought it up. Or, you know, it's not that big a deal because it happens every day. Sometimes we blame ourselves by saying, I don't know why I get so anxious. I don't know why I'm so frightened or so unnerved up or on edge. I must just be overreacting. You know, maybe I blew it out of proportion. Maybe I'm reading into it. But we never, ever take the time to think about why we feel the tension. And the longer you are in an unhealthy environment, the more normalized those feelings become. So I use this analogy before on the podcast. Being in a toxic relationship for a long period of time is like walking into a room that stinks. If you stay in the room, the smell goes away. It's not because the room doesn't stink. It's because your body desensitizes you to the smell. So you don't have to smell the bad smell. But as soon as you walk out of the room, you realize how bad the room smelled. Toxic relationships are much the same. As this behavior continues, you become normalized to it. Your body desensitizes you to it. Your body's going to say, this is a lot of emotional pain. There's a lot of criticism. There's a lot of hurt. There's a lot of hurt feelings. There's a lot of, you know, just really, really negative stuff. And they're not going to be able to stay at this level. So I'm going to desensitize them, because emotional pain is just as intense as physical pain. We don't see it. We can't put our finger on it, which is why it's harder to understand. But the body begins desensitizing you to that environment. So when it occurs again and again and again, we don't feel like the room stinks. We don't feel like it's toxic behavior. We don't feel like it's abnormal, because it's become normal to us because we see it so much. And the body has said, let's not have so much feeling over this. Let's just get used to it, because it's going to continue to happen. The body always keeps track of what's going on around it. It recognizes things. It recognizes people, places that you're at peace with. It notes things, people, and places where you may not feel so good. It keeps track of who is around when you're feeling like this. It recognizes speech, sound, smells, tastes, feelings that you have had or seen or sensed when you were in difficult situations and when you are in peaceful, safe situations. So triggers can be present when you're in a relationship, but they can also be present when you are outside of a relationship. I know when I was in my former marriage, I had an uneasy feeling before I ever went on the first date. And by the third or fourth date, I had that tension, that pressure, that anxiousness. When I tried to address it, or I would ask him, how come I'm feeling like this? Or, you know, when you said that, it hurt my feelings. He always seemed to have a very logical reason why I was feeling this way. So as time went on, I learned that if I just ignore that feeling, then I don't have to have a difficult conversation with him. I don't have to try and understand why I'm feeling like this, because he's telling me I shouldn't. And if I just ignore it, it's going to be much easier, because it clearly had nothing to do with the way he was treating me, according to him. So it must have had something to do with the way I was accepting how he was treating me, meaning maybe I didn't know how to accept love. Maybe I didn't know how to be in a relationship. Maybe I didn't know how to do this at all. So rather than having a difficult conversation about my feelings, I just quit talking about them. And over time, I found myself ignoring every uneasy feeling I had about the relationship. I rationalized each time I felt bad, each time I was tense, each time I had a pain in my stomach, and I would justify it with either it being my fault for overreacting or reading into something, or I would just repeat the words that he said that sounded logical while why I felt this way. You know, maybe you're feeling guilty about something. Is there anything you need to tell me? Okay. Maybe you're feeling like this because you've never really been in a good relationship and you don't know what it feels like. So this is different for you because this is a good relationship, right? Or I'm not doing anything to make you anxious. So if you're feeling it, it must be something that you're battling inside. Maybe you should go talk to somebody, and on and on and on. So rather than me continuing to have to hear that I don't know what a good relationship is, or maybe I'm feeling guilty about something, or it must be something I'm battling internally, I quit. I quit feeling it and expressing that I was feeling it. As the relationship progressed, I had that feeling all the time. That pain in my stomach was very frequent until it became so normal that I lived with a pain in my stomach, walking on eggshells, tense, uneasy all the time. But I no longer saw it as a warning sign. It had become so normal to me that I just lived with it. I didn't know it was my body going, this is not safe. Beware. You're in a spot that emotionally or physically, you shouldn't be here. But because I'd been there so long and I'd been there so much and I'd rationalized the feeling so much, I was just like, it must just be me. I spent years, you know, feeling like this, but I pushed through because I must be overthinking. I must be too sensitive. Or maybe I need to change something. Maybe I need to do some self-work. Maybe I'm codependent. Maybe I need to do some reading. Maybe I need to change something so I feel better in this relationship, because he is who he is, and I need to get used to it. So if I want to feel better, it must be me that needs to change. There were times when I felt peaceful and I felt I could be myself. But those were only certain situations with certain people. So soon I called it compartmentalizing. I didn't know that compartmentalizing was a thing. That was just a word that I came up with because that's what I felt. I felt like a different person depending on what environment I was in and who was with me. And, you know, there was times I was nervous and anxious and I felt very heavy. And those were certain environments with certain people. And then there was times where I felt very peaceful and I could be myself and I could be happy and I could show my personality. And those tended to be different situations and different people than the ones that I felt heavy and anxious around. What was interesting was that the peaceful times and the not peaceful times, if that's what we want to call them, were completely different situations. I would change who I was depending on which environment I was in. If I was in this environment, I could be this Heidi. If I was in this environment, I had to be this Heidi. If I was in this environment, I had to be this Heidi. And I learned to regulate the person that I showed depending on how safe I was within those environments. For example, when I was at work, you know, I was confident. I was very good with my patients. I was a good adjuster. I would laugh. I would interact, provide care for them. I got to know my patients very, very well. I could be myself at work. They had confidence in me. My body didn't feel or sense any danger when I was in the work environment where I could be myself. But on my way home from work, I would turn into a completely different person. I didn't realize it was so drastic until I looked back on it. But I would be quiet, anxious, nervous. I would turn off my confidence. I would turn off my power. I would turn off my intelligence. I would become someone who was ready to react and accommodate to somebody else, to do all the things that I could do to keep the peace and avoid the conflict. I didn't speak my mind. My opinion was silent. I didn't make any decisions. I went along with whatever had been planned and decided for me, and I became a shell of the woman who had left work 30 minutes earlier. This is how our body protects us. When we are in a safe place with healthy people and a healthy relationship, we're relaxed. We're confident. We feel worthy. We are able to be the person we want and that we were meant to be when we're in a safe place. But when we're in a place where there has been unsafe happenings, our body's going to shift to the person that is in survival mode. We shift to the person that we believe the toxic personality wants us to be, because they are constantly making demands on us changing. So the person that we figured out how to be the safest. So we switch hats between different environments. We're a priority at work. We're focused. We're relaxed. We're free to speak our minds. We're free to give our opinions, and we're free to make decisions. But that's not the way it is in a toxic environment. They are the priority. Our attention is on them. We don't have an opinion, nor do we dare make decisions or make mistakes for fear of causing any type of conflict. So this is just one example of how our body keeps track of how we feel and how we react in different environments and with different personalities. Now, switching from one person to another over and over and over becomes normal to you. So normal that you don't even realize you're doing it, but the people around you will. Your closest friends will say, you're a completely different person when you're here than when you're with them. Or your family will notice, you're so much happier when we hang out together. And then when we see you in a different environment, you're a completely different person. This is one aspect of survival mode. As time passes, it becomes exhausting to keep up with the accommodations to be our protective person. And what happens is that person that always is trying to protect will kind of overflow into all the other categories. And then what happens is we feel like there's no safe places left, because we get so used to accommodating to people that we start accommodating to the people who we used to not accommodate to. Now, we put ourselves last on the list in every situation because it's easier. We allow things and accept things that we wouldn't normally accept because it's easier. We stay home rather than asking permission to go out because it's easier. We quit all our hobbies so that your time is available for when they need it because it's easier. We change our values. We change our religious views. We change our political views. How to raise the kids, how to dress, how you wear your hair, how you spend money in hopes to please them because it's easier. You know, we completely change who we are to become what they say they need, because it's easier than struggling to keep our own identity, which has become very, very high conflict. Things are said to us, things are done to us, things are blamed on us. We should do things better. We should change. They tell us how we should feel. All become avenues of abuse that the toxic person uses to take our identity away so that we can live their life rather than our own. The things that I just listed: what is said, what is done, blame, what is wrong with us, how we feel, what we should change. These are all the things that, when experienced repetitively over time, are going to create thinking patterns that compromise ourselves and glorify other people. It is a conditioned response. It's a conditioned response to, again, keep the conflict down, keep the peace. Be accepted, be good enough. Don't have to hear what's wrong with you. We begin accepting the words as true, and we strive to become better for them and hope that the acceptance level will come up, the relationship will feel calmer, and we have done our part in in making the changes that they demanded. Our minds get attacked. They get invaded. They get overtaken by these constant manipulations of changing this and changing that and accommodating and switching. And in that, our attention is never on us because we're always trying to anticipate what's coming next so we can change, accommodate, fix, cover up, or smooth out conflict before it happens. What you may not realize is our body has made note of all of that. Now, if I could take anything away from my clients, from the listeners, from the people I work with, it would be what happens next. The pain, the confusion, the alienation, the self-loathing. Now, if you've been through this and you hear me say self-loathing, I never thought I would be one to use the word self-loathing, but the hopelessness and the defeat and that self-hatred is what I wish I could carry for my patients. How do I know that I wish I could carry it for you? Because I have lived this. I have lived every single part of this. There are times that even after 15 years, I still have some of this. And it can be debilitating and exhausting. And this is what people don't understand when you try to explain it. Many have left toxic relationships, including me. And they will tell you, this part is hard. It is awful. It is humiliating. And it's frustrating. Your mind has been conditioned to think the way the toxic personality wanted you to think of the situation, of yourself, and how you were supposed to be. Now, all we know is we need to have self-care. We get out, we need to have self-care, and we need to try and recover from this healthy relationship. That's all the information we really get. But in reality, we don't even know what self-care means. We don't know what start your new life, you know, love yourself more, go do new things, get new friends, do everything you want to do. We don't know the answer to any of those. We don't know what makes us happy. We don't know what we like. We don't know what our hobbies are. We don't know how to make friends without being worried that we're not going to be good enough. And it's very, very, very heavy. You know, there are triggers like smelling the same cologne, hearing the same words, seeing the same car, etc. And that's going to make your stomach jump. That's going to make your mind speed up. Your body does not know that it's not them wearing the cologne. It's not them speaking those words. It's not them driving the car. All your body knows is that the last time we smelled, heard, or saw this, we were not in a place that was safe for us. So your body is going to trigger. Oh, there's a car. It's going to remind you of that. Your body says, watch it. Oh, you smelled the cologne. Your body says, watch it. We don't feel safe when we experience these type of triggers because it reminds us of those who we did not feel safe around. And it sometimes can be super intense that you can't even rationalize for the trigger to go away. Now, how do those triggers happen? Your body remembers it because your body keeps track. If you are in a place where you have had time to be apart for part of the time, like if you've moved out and you only see them half the time, you have had time to experience peace. You will notice that tense feeling a lot more intently if you found a place to be calm. So notice how your body is feeling around people. When I had triggers like the cologne or the words or the car, I could usually identify what caused those and then remind myself, you know, yes, but I'm safe. And there's a lot of cars like that. And there's a lot of people that wear that cologne. And I just recognized it. And if I could pinpoint what the trigger was, two or three times down the road, the trigger doesn't trigger me anymore. And those have been triggers that I have been able to work through. And I have worked through a lot. But the triggers that I'm talking about today, when it says, what do you feel like when you're triggered? These are triggers that will send you spiraling into that black hole. And when I'm talking about the black hole, it's the self-loathing. It's the humiliating. It's the wanting to disappear black hole. Has anybody had those? I did, and occasionally I still do, and I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I had no idea that after 15 years, I would still be fighting the programming from my past. But the more I learn and the more I realize, it's more than a trigger. This is something that the body did to protect you. And now it's almost a conditioned response. You know, those years I spent in an unhealthy, emotionally abusive relationship changed me. They changed me forever. They changed the way I think about others, the way I think about myself. It changed the way I trust others, the lack of trust that I have in myself, the lack of trust I have in others. It changed the way I accept myself. It changed the way I see certain situations, you know, the size of my dreams. It changed my expectations for my life. It changed my values. It changed what I saw as normal. It changed my perception of the world. It instilled fears that I should never have feared. I was molded into a perfectionist. Like, I tried so hard to do everything perfect so that someone somewhere would accept me. So in doing that, I overworked. I overachieved. I overdid everything. But you know what? It didn't really matter how over I did, because it seemed like it was never good enough. I still felt like I had not reached that desired level of perfect. Even if there were some people that were accepting, the ones that I felt I needed acceptance from weren't accepting. And that perfectionist drive is one of the things that I have carried over into my new life. And I've worked very hard on not being perfect. There was a long period of time where I could not go to bed if the kitchen was not cleaned up. And I would clean up the whole kitchen because it had to be perfect in the morning. So I forced myself a few years ago to leave dishes on the counter. Now, I hated it every morning when I got up, but I realized nothing happened overnight when the dishes were on the counter. It was fine. And so I used little things like that to start breaking up that perfectionist thing. You know, I work for myself. I've always worked for myself. That is achieve, achieve, achieve. Especially when you have society pouring down on, are you successful yet? Are you successful yet? No, you just keep pushing and pushing, and you look at the numbers and you look at the money and you look at, and you know, it doesn't matter how big you grow or how much money you make. There's always more. So in that situation, you're never going to be perfect. The other thing I kind of developed is if things weren't 100% perfect, then they were 100% failure. If it wasn't 100% good, it was 100% bad. So there was no middle ground for me. Everything was black and white. Well, if I'm not all the way in, I'm all the way out. And I would treat people like this. Oh, you don't want to do it? Fine, we won't do it. There was no discussion. I was just trained very yes or no. You did it or you failed. And I have had to work very hard on that. I'm still working on that, putting the gray area back in. You know, when I met the man that I'm married to now, he knew my past. He knew there would be struggles. He knew what he was getting into, or so we thought. He thought he was prepared, and he was willing to support me no matter the cost. He did a great job. In fact, I'm just going to say it. He is agreed to be on the podcast. Finally, I've been asking him for years. So stay tuned, because my now husband has episodes of the podcast coming up talking about what it's like to date somebody that's been in a relationship like this, what it's like to be married to somebody that's been in a relationship like this, because he thought he understood. 15 years later, he now admits he doesn't understand. So coming up in June, the podcasts with him are going to be released. And it was interesting for me to be able to talk through that with him on the podcast, because he never really felt like he could be open because he was worried it was going to make me feel like there was something wrong. And we both agreed that the reason he wasn't on the podcast before was because the timing wasn't right. But, you know, he did a great job, and I do not know how he did it. I had so much baggage. I still have stuff. He supported me through the years, but he assumed I would get over it. You know, well, surprise, surprise to both of us. we've come to the realization this isn't something that we get over. You know, I was completely numb when I met him. You know, many of you can relate. When you're in toxic situations and we have someone who is controlling our emotions, we tend to go emotionless. You know, we don't stay happy very long because it doesn't last very long. And we can't say sad. We can't be sad because it gets criticized. And we definitely can't be mad because then we're the abusive one, right? So we start operating with zero emotion. And that was how he met me. And as time went on, I worked and worked and worked on healing and overcoming things. And I pushed myself to make changes and I pushed myself to try new things and meet new people and say hell yes and to say hell no. And I learned to forget about the opinions of other people. And I've done really well at that. I have people that don't like me. And you know what? I don't care. I'm over that. You don't like me? So what? I learned to take care of myself again, to go to the doctor when I needed it, to find a dentist, to dress cute, to take care of my skin, to take care of my hair. I learned to be silly. I learned to communicate clearly. I have fun. I laugh. I laugh a lot. And those were things that over the years I have been able to fix. And even though I spent a lot of time overcoming the yucky stuff that I carried out of that relationship, there are still a lot of things that haven't gone away. And it is heartbreaking for me because I really, in my head, want to feel like I'm normal. You know, I've decreased the size of my inner circle to only the people I trust. I used to be, yeah, come in. Everybody was in my inner circle. Well, I spent the last 15 years kicking them out. I learned to hang on to the things that matter. And I learned to not hang on to the things that don't. You feel rejection and you hang on. And I've learned to let things go. I've learned that I have a lot more control over letting things go out of my life than making things come into my life. I've changed the way I look at confrontation. There doesn't have to be a fight all the time. You can have a conversation with somebody without having to fight. Now, in the toxic relationship, you fight because the toxic person always wins, and that is power, and that is control, and that is attention. So I was a trained fighter, and I learned you can actually have conversations and resolve things without fighting. Now, rather than jumping to everyone's demands and doing what everybody thinks I should be doing, I ask myself, is jumping to this situation going to bring me peace, or is it going to disrupt my peace? Because I now, not that I'm perfect at it, but I now am aware of how I put myself last and how I have been conditioned to put myself last. So I have to logically and intentionally think about the things I do. And is it going to bring peace or is it going to disrupt peace? And I've learned to choose peace. And I have tried to make a promise to myself that if I know there's a decision and one way is going to bring peace and the other way is going to bring disruption, even if I want to disrupt it because of anger or resentment or bitterness, I've promised myself that I'm going to choose peace. There's a lot of times you want to say shit that you probably shouldn't say, but it's going to disrupt your peace. So I have just learned I want to protect myself and I want to protect my peace because I've worked very hard for it. So if I ask myself the question, is it going to bring peace or disrupt peace? I promise myself I will choose the direction that brings peace. Okay. So I did a lot of work and it sounds like I'm all good, right? Sounds like I'm great. Sounds like I got it. No wonder she's doing this job. But every once in a while, I will get hit out of the blue with a terrible feeling, a feeling that is so bad. I literally wish I could just disappear and rent a little apartment somewhere and nobody knew where I'm at. Like for someone who is so social and loves to be around people and loves to help people and loves to talk to people and just loves to, you know, just be in the people environment, for me to get hit with a feeling so bad that I just want to go find an apartment where nobody knows that I'm at, that is absolutely a horrible place to be. The feeling, it almost feels like there is another person inside of me fighting with me. It's a feeling of complete failure. that I, you know, the way I behave hurts the people I love, that I'm completely unlovable, that I am a wreck, that I shouldn't be in a relationship. Nobody should have to put up with me. I feel very disconnected from others. And the feeling is total alone. And it reminds me of the feeling that I had when I was in that relationship. This feeling is so strong that there's nothing I can do to get away from it. I can't describe it to anybody because nobody knows. I look like I'm losing my mind. I feel like I'm losing my mind. It is a hurt that's so uncomfortable that I all of a sudden feel completely hopeless and damaged, just like I did when I left. I cannot get away from it. You cannot get away from the feeling. You can't talk your way out of it. You can't breathe your way out of it. I don't know where to run. I don't know how to make myself calm down. I can't rationalize anything except that I am worthless and I am pathetic and I'm damaged and I am damaging everybody's life that I'm involved with. Now, these episodes will go on for hours, sometimes days. And I have a hard time. I have a hard time living my normal life when my mind is occupied with these thoughts. One thing, though, that I have figured out that I do very well, even through these episodes, excuse me, is take care of my clients. For some reason, I do not falter in that. And I may not be able to record a podcast. Excuse me. I may not be able to write an article. I may not be able to do the laundry. But because I know these people that I'm speaking with are safe for me and totally understand, I have the power and the confidence to work very well with my clients. When this type of trigger shows up, it is what I would say completely debilitating for me. And why do I still have to have these? Haven't I suffered enough? Like I had to work in that relationship. I had to work to get out of that relationship. All I've done is work, work, work. And now this, have I not done enough to be able to feel confident that I can behave and react and process my emotions normally? You know, why am I still paying for a bad decision? The self-hatred. And again, I don't even use the word hate, but when I am in these spirals, the self-hatred is so intense. Sometimes I feel like I'm right back where I was. You know, these are the triggers that I would like to be able to carry for people. This overwhelming feeling of doom. Now, when I can finally settle down and reflect on what happened or what caused it, I have tracked it. It almost always has something to do with how somebody close to me treated me, spoke to me, or interacted with me, or my perception of how they treated me, spoke to me, or interacted with me. And guess what, people? This right here is a result of repetitive, long-standing emotional trauma. Emotional abuse is real. Emotional abuse changes the way you see yourself, and it changes the way you feel others see you. Emotional abuse conditions you to believe we are broken, damaged, crazy, at fault, worthless, and unlovable. And years of being criticized and corrected and controlled and invalidated, ignored and put down and treated disrespectfully changed the pathways in my brain. I learned to cater to others and not to myself. You know, I catered at a perfect level so I wouldn't be criticized. I catered so much that there was zero attention or time left for me to live my life, to follow my dreams, to be the person that I was. That person completely disappeared. Now, it's not all the time that this happens, but when it happens, it puts me right back into my past. And in the end, the only way I was able to get out of that situation was to run away. And I did. So when these show up in my mind, the only way to get away from it is to run away. And I will tell you that there has been times, even in my new life, as good as it is. And you know what? The triggers don't even have to do with relationships. But there's been times in my new life that this has come over me so strongly that I wanted to run away, which also hurts the people that I love. They don't want to hear that I want to run away. That doesn't make them feel like they're doing a good job either. So we have this perpetual cycle of me not feeling good about myself and me being upset, which makes them feel like they're not doing a good job of supporting me, which makes my empathetic personality and heart break because they're doing a perfect job. And it hurts me to think that now they're feeling like they're not doing a good enough job because I'm having a trigger. You know, what happened to me is we jump from the frying pan into the fire. You know, I was conditioned how to respond and how to jump and how to accommodate in that relationship. And because I had done away with everything that I knew and how I used to behave and how I used to take care of myself, that when I stepped into a new environment, I carried that behavior with me. So for one, I get so angry that I'm still struggling with this program cycle. I thought that through the years that I could fix it because in my head I was doing well. Then I stepped into this awful relationship with my former and my life got turned completely upside down, right? So logically speaking, wouldn't it make sense that if I got out of that relationship, my life would be turned right side up again? Well, I now know that is not the case. I've tried everything I knew. And yet these episodes still tend to happen. And at this point in my healing, they're very, very few and far between. When I talk about them, it's not every day. It's not every month. It might be one a year. It does seem like it takes me a while to get out of them. So where there's one, there's consecutively two or three. And then a year will go by and it will be fine. But I spent 15 years trying to fix and overcome, to feel normal, to handle stress, to handle the issues, to be calm. And every time there would be a trigger, it would knock me right back to where I was because for some reason, I felt like I wasn't fixing it. I would be doing good. I get hit with one of these. It would reveal to me that I am still not fixed. And me trying to stay away from the anger part that I still have to deal with this has been hard. Just over the past several months, sadly, I had to accept that this may not be something that I can fix. This is probably not something that's going to go away. It's not going to be fixed. And I've been trying to hide it. And I've been trying to not let people know this still happens because I don't want them to think the same thing everybody else thinks. This is not something I can promise won't happen again. This is not something that is wrong with me. This is something that has happened to me, and it will be a lifelong challenge. And it's just been in the last few months that I realized I'm not fixing this. I'm done trying to fix this. I am accepting it. You know, those around me are sick of me blaming my behaviors on the past. I mean, this was years ago. And some people don't want to put up with it anymore. They're like, oh my gosh, she's doing fine and she's not doing fine. It's a very isolating feeling. And those who I felt understood didn't. So there I am again, completely alone, no one, and no way to escape from myself. Well, guess what? I am not pretending anymore. I can't control these. I am not going to promise anyone this will not happen. I am not going to worry and stress that when they do, I'm going to lose the people that support me. If they don't understand me, well, they're lucky. And I will not hold them responsible for understanding me anymore. I'm not going to pretend I'm okay. I'm not going to act happy 100% of the time because there's 8,000 emotions. I thought there was three, but I was trained to act happy all the time so that it appeared perfect, right? And because I didn't want anybody to see these triggers, I continue to act happy all the time. And I'm not doing that anymore. I get to have any emotion I want, even the negative ones that we've been told are bad. You know, that's what I did in the first half of my life. I pretended I was 100% okay. in my first relationship. I'm not going to continue to act like I feel safe if I don't. That's what I did in the first half of my life. And I am not going to promise that these things won't happen. That this is not something that I can prevent. I'm not going to pretend that I have it all together. It's too much pressure on me. And that's what I did the first half of my life. You know, many people that I felt were true friends have fallen off. And I think I became too much at times because they didn't understand it. And that's okay with me now. I would rather live by myself than live with the scrutiny again that someone is demanding perfection on me. Now, I will have to tell you, I spent years hoping my now husband would understand this. We have come to the conclusion that he doesn't, and I've accepted that. I've accepted these triggers and these flashbacks. They're part of me. They're not going to go away, and I am not going to promise anybody that I'm fixed or that I'm perfect or that they're never going to happen again. So I've just come up with ways to take care of myself so that when they do happen, I have a plan. I've gotten familiar, you know, with the things that make this happen. I've gotten firmer with those that are close to me. If they can't deal with this, they have the right to change how they interact with me because it's too much pressure for me to pretend this isn't going to happen. That's what I used to do. I fought this for so long that letting go has been a huge relief. Now that I've accepted this as part of myself, the things that changed me, I'm finding it so much simpler to love myself because I hated myself for having to hide this side of me because I didn't want to be judged. I didn't want to be somebody that had been abused because the minute you hear abuse, people look at you differently. So now that I've accepted those things, I've accepted myself and I've been able to love the things about myself that I used to hate. You know, the days of pretending that nothing happened and downplaying what I've been through, acting like I'm fixed. Yeah, those days are over for me. You know, there may be days that I make no sense to other people and I may be too much for them and there may be too much emotion and I may appear as a basket case, which I have been described both in my former life and in my new life by those who do not understand. But this is my path to understand. This is not theirs. So now, am I fixed? Nope. Am I normal? I am 100% normal for someone who has gone through what I have gone through. I made it. I'm happy. I'm content. And I am absolutely loved by many.